after too long a wait, and I know that you're listening to this and going, where have they been? And you've been tossing and turning every single night going, are they okay? You know, are Brian and Tim alive? We're here. We've just been eating nonstop and seeing how, you know, how we can survive this lockdown. And the answer was food. And so we thought, look, let's start recording again, another episode of Eat, Eat, Eat. And we're back. I'm Tim and Brian's here as well. Hey, Brian.
Hello.
How are you?
I mean, we were really just trying to prove a point because our last episode was about New Year's resolutions. And I think we said that most people don't keep resolutions. So really we were just providing continuity and providing a real life example of how difficult it is to, you know, to say you do something. I think we're going to say we're going to record every month.
Yeah.
And here we are 6 months down the track. But the important thing is, you know, there's this concept in meditation. It's not about how many times you get distracted. It's the moment you come back and you focus. And it's not about how many months you don't record an episode of your podcast. It's, you know, it's just great when you do. So
I was listening back to some of our older episodes and I did notice a recurring theme of like cult-like messages like that. So that, yeah, I'm glad nothing's changed. The 888 cult, the 888 cult lives on. Yeah, maybe
what would we call it?
I think it was think. Think.
We didn't come up with a name for like the IBS version of the podcast.
shit.
Bloat.
Ow. yeah, but how have you been? We're back in lockdown. We've kind of feels like it's never ending because it was this time last year. I think we were recording and talking about getting through lockdown, and we really got to enjoy life in Sydney for some time and really get out and eat and drink and stuff again. But we're back at it, so you know. But there's still ways to enjoy food and. Actually, one of them today, like I must say, I've got to quickly give you a shout out, Brian, and give a Black Star Pastry a shout out. You got me a bit of a late birthday present of these, like a variety of Black Star cakes delivered yesterday. And I've slowly been making my way through them and I still feel quite ill, but it's like a happy ill. It's that really good, like, I'm embracing feeling sick because the cake has just been so good. So yeah, thank you for that. But we'll talk a bit more about that. I think we're going to talk cake today. But just you all good? How are things going? You're eating well?
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of I'm out of that initial kind of shock and depressed phase of this lockdown, and I'm into like the maintenance phase. Yeah, I guess kind of this week is the first week that all of the children in my house aren't sick, so that's a good thing. So yeah, it's bit by bit, but yeah, again enjoying cooking again, and getting a fruit and vegetable box delivered, which is always a real treat. And yeah, just really enjoying my vegetables.
We're the same. We've been getting a box delivered from the providors out at the market. I think I was doing that this time last year. I think I mentioned it on a podcast. And yeah, it does really make you enjoy vegetables and get a bit experimental with your cooking. And I must say, like, if anyone's still kind of going up to their mass supermarket, you know, going up to their Woolies or something, maybe look into doing this. There's a bunch of providors and fruit and veg providers doing delivery at the moment. It's the prices are similar or a little bit cheaper and the quality is a lot better from my experience. So yeah, that would be lockdown tip number one if you're listening and you want to spice up your fruit and veg life. Yeah,
and the kicker for me was that they often kind of source other really good products and bits and pieces. So the one that I used, they also deliver Brickfields bread and, you know, awesome honey and stuff like that. So being able to get a Brickfield sourdough, you know, every week is such a treat. So Yeah, definitely give it a go. It just feels like Christmas, you know. The box comes in, you open it up, there's all these different bits and pieces. And it saves, I mean, it's a little, it takes a little bit of practice to kind of do your ready, steady, cook every week, but I think once you get into the swing of it, it's so good.
Do you get the Brickfields ciabatta seeded rolls? That's like my ultimate Brickfields item. Another example of how, like, I think it's caraway seed or something that they use. It's just like such an underused ingredient. So yeah, make sure your next order, Brian, get a few of those rolls.
Yeah, I usually just get the sourdough, the big one, but I do remember those ciabattas because I think when I had their brisket roll with fermented chili and kraut, that's the roll that it's on. And it's just, yeah, it's pillowy heaven, but also that kind of crispy caraway vibe around the edges as well. It's happy days.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, this cake delivery though, look, I'm not like, I love like, I do enjoy cake, but I don't like, I'm not someone who would like binge cake. So it has been a little bit of a marathon to get through this, but the quality of this Black Star delivery, like I love it. It came with the, you know, this little a color-coded cake system.
Tasting notes. Color-coding, yeah.
So yeah, we got the cakes that were included were the famous strawberry watermelon cake. We got the raspberry lychee cake in there. I've eaten both of those. Enjoyed them a lot. You know, you gave me the advice, eat the ones with the kind of fresh fruit first. So I've been going with that. Pistachio lemon zen. I haven't eaten that yet, but I've heard from Black Star purists that that might be the highlight of this experience. So I'm looking forward to that.
That was my fave.
Yeah. There's also the chocolate mirage, which I can report. Somebody got a little bit tipsy last night for the first time in a while and ate that at 11 p.m. you know, I think I even did I put it on a piece of plate that rested on my COVID belly as I leant back in the couch just with chocolate.
The Tony Soprano.
Yeah, I did the Tony Soprano with that. That was so good. I think the highlight of it was the base, which I'm looking at this, maybe a puffed cacao rice streusel. So,
sure. Wow.
Then there's the Japanese forest cake. I haven't had that yet, but that sounds really good.
That's really unique. So it's got it's like a play on like the traditional Black Forest, but they use ume, which is like, I think it's like a salted plum vibe instead of the cherry. So really clever and yeah, really subtle too. So
and you got a bit of you're having a little taste of Black Forest right now, aren't you?
Well, that was the surprise. Obviously I surprised you with the Black Star delivery. And then immediately you know, we swapped messages, yada yada, and you know, you were very happy. And then later that night I got a package at my door. I thought it was something else. I was expecting something else. So I was just like, oh, you know, there must be that thing. But then I opened it up and I saw it and it was Dan Murphy's and I was like, oh, okay, I didn't order anything. And I open it up and I see a 4-pack of Moondog Craft Brewery Cake Hole Black Forest Stout. And so I put two and two together and yes, you did the cheeky counter move and did the same day delivery of a cake beer to me. So well played, sir. And
yeah,
it's delicious.
Cheers. You've got that. I'm drinking my my ideal dessert beer. I've got my Tui's Old here. You know, it's a bit of it actually does say here on the bottle, I've just noticed, of a Tui's Old with subtle notes of chocolate and roasted coffee. And I agree. You know, maybe a little bit burnt, burnt chocolate and slightly burnt coffee, but I love it. Love you, great dessert beer. And yeah, I also I left one. I just noticed I missed one cake off the list there, and it's because I've got it in front of me. It's the dragon cake, which I'm looking has finely sliced dragon fruit, pineapple, vanilla cream, pomegranate jelly, vanilla sponge, and a biscuit base. I might just, do you mind if I, can I just have a little bite?
You go for it. I've got a bit of a scoop, a bit of an inside scoop about Black Star. Ooh. So the maker and the founder of Black Star Pastry, he is I guess a friend of a friend. So my friend Ellen and her husband Hugo, around the time of their wedding, you know, Blackstar was getting up and running, and their friends. So Ellen and Hugo asked Christopher the baker to come up with a cake for their wedding, something summery, which was kind of in line with their theme. And they had a very kind of casual reception, just with, you know, finger food and stuff. So the cake, I think, was intended to be a kind of layer sandwich with a twist. So this was the strawberry watermelon cake. So just to explain it, there's layers of almond dakwa, which is like a meringue. There's rose-scented cream, kind of compressed watermelon, and it's topped with strawberries, pistachios, and dried rose petals. And it's become, quote unquote, the most Instagrammed cake in the world.
The fact that you have a friend of a friend that cake is probably what took Blackstar to what it is today, you know, an international franchise. That was the cake that made Blackstar famous.
I would say so. So yeah, it's a really lovely story. The only twist to the story is that Ellen forgot to tell Chris from Blackstar that her mum was quite seriously allergic to strawberries. So poor mum didn't get any cake at the wedding. But hopefully she probably got a slice of something else.
I was worried where that story was going, by the way. I was like,
where could it have gone?
The only twist was that, you know, she didn't tell her mum that there was watermelon in the cake, and mum just dove headfirst into it, as mums do. Like, you know, I saw your mum do that at the wedding. She went straight into the cake and, you know, full on allergic reaction.
Okay. Well, speaking of my wedding, I've got some audio, which you might recognize.
Enjoyed the main meal as much as I did. It was absolutely delicious. And but I hope we left some space, because I know there's that separate stomach that everybody has, which is their cake stomach. And looking at this thing, I don't know if you can actually see from here, but this side doesn't actually exist, because every time I've been putting the microphone down, I just take a little piss. So I apologize about that. But it's actually, this has been made by Xanthi's mum. Like, and that is... So when NY was complimenting Xanthi's amazing dessert making, you can see where it's come from, because this is something else. I'm very excited to eat the other half of this cake. But we're gonna get into it, and we're gonna cut the cake now. So I believe that means I invite the newlyweds up here. So everyone get up for Carmen.
So does that sound familiar?
Yeah, that sounded like a younger and happier me.
So that's there's video as well, so I'll send it to you after we chat. But that is footage from my wedding, and that is indeed the voice of Tim Higgins. So Tim was nice enough to be the MC at my wedding, and that's him introducing our wedding cake, me and my wife's wedding cake. Obviously, you know, a hilarious job Tim did. Actually, I showed my daughter this some of this footage, and, you know, I was explaining, you know, part of Tim's role on the night was to make jokes. So now whenever we talk about jokes, your name comes up. You're the joke man, Tim.
Yeah, it's like Uncle Tim, he's a joke. He's an absolute joke. Repeat after me, Lumi. Uncle Tim's a joke. Yeah, it's gone far enough, all right? Like sending your daughter to my house in the middle of a lockdown to buzz the doorbell and call me a joke. Like, come on, Brian. It's like, you know, we're all going through some tricky situations at the moment, you know, like getting your kids involved, though. Come on.
This is like McNulty from whatever season of The Wire who sends his daughter on as a tail.
Oh, yeah, as an in an undercover mission.
That's what I'm doing, just to shame you and your life.
But look, it's okay, I've forgiven you because I just smashed half of that dragon cake. And that was a real surprise. I think, again, it's something to do with the biscuit base of these cakes, especially like a fruity cake like this one. And I believe the lychee one I ate earlier also had a bit of a crunch to it. And it's so, it really works to have a fruity sort of cake with a crunchy biscuit base. I'm not sure why. Any idea why that's doing that? What's your opinion about crunch and fruit?
Well, I think it's just good kind of flavor planning and good design. I mean, the reason why I think particularly the watermelon strawberry cake is such a success, I mean, visually and also just by the name of it and the concept, it's very attractive. But when you eat it, there's kind of a variety of textures happening. There's the kind of the cool crunch of the watermelon. And then that almond dakwa has a really interesting kind of chewy, crispy kind of texture. And then you've got the cream coming through with the smoothness. So I think that dakwa or, you know, the biscuit base is really important as kind of the counterpoint to the fresh and creamy flavors.
You're saying words like dakwa here. You're speaking to a guy who, okay, these cakes are great. I admit these Black Star cakes are something else. But if you put it to me, like, would I take this or one of those, like, do you remember those like black and gold frozen cheesecakes? Like you could get the lemon one, or you could get like a chocolate Black Forest one. And they didn't even bother with a cardboard box. They're like, well, we're going to cut costs. They just chuck the foil thing in your local IGA. Would I take Black Star or that? I'd have to have a serious like moment I'd have to pull out the whiteboard and write pros and cons. But I don't know. It's like, I guess that's for me, like, it's obviously okay, the quality doesn't really compare, but the nostalgia impact of cake, I think cake is for me is so linked to nostalgia, like the cakes that my mum used to make me when I was young. And I don't know, like Woman's Weekly cakes, did you ever have those as a kid? Or,
I mean, I don't think so. Like, we didn't have an oven in the house, so we didn't really the mechanism to make a cake.
Well, I don't know. I just made a cheesecake the other day in my pressure.
Oh, cheesecake!
I made a cheesecake in my pressure. I made a cheesecake in my pressure cooker. You know, I'm sure you had a rice cooker.
No. We were known. No, I was known amongst my friends as the Asian that didn't have a rice cooker.
What?
Yeah, my mom just used to cook it like in the microwave.
Yeah, which is smart. It works. It works very well.
But no, I mean, I think maybe we would have done like... I don't know how we would have cooked the cake.
Okay.
I think maybe... No. We had like a microwave oven, so there was some kind of oveny feature. But it certainly wasn't the thing. I mean, like my sister went through a phase of making cheesecakes. So
what are your early memories of cake then? Did you have that McDonald's, you know, the McDonald's ice cream cake? Surely there's got to be a childhood memory of cake.
I think I always used to want to, I always requested like the Boston mud cake from like the cheesecake shop or something for my birthday. So that was definitely a highlight. What else? To be honest, like that's kind of it.
This is sad.
I mean, there's a weird cake at Yumcha. It's like a sponge cake. That's I guess it's technically cake, but it's steamed.
In the Yumcha hierarchy, where is the steamed cake lady? Is she closer to the boss lady, or is she down the bottom?
No, it's a pretty kind of low-key item. Like, it's certainly not like the Dan Tart. Doesn't go close to Dan Tart. And it looks like a sponge that you wash your car with, so it's not like particularly doesn't look particularly appetizing, but it is cake nonetheless. What were your main memories? You had these supermarket black and gold cheesecake.
They were my personal favorite, but yeah, definitely the I'm like, in terms of what my mum made, I remember the Women's Weekly cakes, which I think are very iconic. I don't know if it's just an Australian thing or what, but like, you know, you have like your, I don't know, some cake that looks like a different animal, a lion cake. And it's really interesting, actually. My friends who now have young kids are often cooking from that same Woman's Weekly cake book and like for their kids' like birthdays. So it's like, it's something that is just ingrained in Australian cake, you know, the love of cake is, it's, I think a lot of it has come from that, those like Women's Weekly cakes, like covered in Smarties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, McDonald's ice cream cake as well, I would say.
Yeah.
Going to like kids' parties and then having that big McDonald's ice cream cake.
Mm. I mean, obviously, you know, the nostalgia comes from good times, right? It's like you were at a kid's birthday party, but it was your birthday and it was exciting. But I think there's something inherently joyous about the cutting of a cake. There's a sense of forced sharing. Like you can eat a cake by yourself, but you'll feel horrible and guilty afterwards. But I think it's that sense of sharing. And also the fact that the process of making a cake is kind of magical. Like you take all these ingredients that you wouldn't dream of eating separately. You put it in a bowl and you mix it and then it rises magically. And then it comes out as this kind of magical object that's utterly delicious. So there's a certain kind of magic that comes with it. But yeah, like what are your favorite cakes now? Or like does anyone at your house make any delicious cakes?
Well, I'm actually going to give your wife a shout out. I think she's made one of the best cakes I've ever eaten. She's a bit of a master cake maker, as you would have heard me say in your wedding speech. But she made a Guinness chocolate cake? That cake, I think it probably was because it has like 3 kilos of butter or something in it. But I've since like, I've loved that cake and I've actually got the recipe and I made my friend who loves Tui's Old, which as I'm currently drinking, and I made him a Tui's Old version of the cake. It worked.
It's incredible. It's a Nigella recipe and it's, yeah, particularly decadent. But you've got the kind of cream cheese icing, which kind of looks like the foamy head. So yeah, I mean, yeah, my wife is a wonderful baker. She was saying the other day that she found a pin, like a badge that said procrastinator. We talked about she's more of like an emotional baker. Like when she's feeling really stressed out, she'll be like, oh, okay, I need to bake. And then she'll feel better. But yeah, like it's she comes from a family of bakers. Like it was her mom, my mother-in-law, that made our wedding cake, which was a carrot cake.
Be one of my favorite styles of cake. By the way, carrot cake is right up there. I just love it.
It's a classic, and the fact that like talking about vegetables again, the fact that you can make a vegetable so tasty, it's too good to be true. I looked at Wikipedia as I always do. I mean, we could have made this whole episode about wedding cakes because there's a insane kind of history and legacy for wedding cakes. So apparently traditionally the wedding cakes was a fruit cake. And in the 17th century, two cakes were made, the groom's cake, which was the fruit cake, and then the bride's cake, which was a pound cake with white icing. In medieval England, cakes were stacked as high as possible for the bride and groom to kiss over. And if they successfully kissed, then they were guaranteed a prosperous life. And that was how the croquembouche was created, which is really interesting.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, hopeful bridesmaids would take a piece of the cake home and then put it under their pillow. Some bridesmaids would sleep with the piece of cake in their left stocking. I mean, overall, it became traditional to save the top part of the wedding cake to be eaten at the celebration of the couple's first child. So some slightly dubious WHS practices, but, all in the sake of auspicious cake eating, really.
Yeah, well, Brian, you know that my partner, Beck, and I, we got engaged a long time ago. The wedding, we got engaged and then I think she was like, yeah, cool, that'll do. So Some of this cake you got delivered to me yesterday, I've been putting a little bit in my left stocking every night to hopefully, you know, speed the wedding up.
Did I know that? I don't even know.
Well, yeah, don't worry. Well, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. We got engaged at a brewery when somebody had, like, because I had a long story of, like, a long habit of me just asking her to marry me. And
oh, right, okay.
When I was like, it was more just like a panic response of like, I'd come home drunk and I'd be like, marry me. but yeah, this one was just like, it'd been like years of her just saying like, no, shut up, leave me alone. Who are you, stranger? Yeah, and then eventually, well, just at a brewery, and I was just like, maybe had a few drinks, and I was like, oh, marry me, and she was like, okay, and I was like, what just happened? And we didn't get cake to celebrate, but we went and got a pizza pie. We ate some crappy pizza up on the Central Coast where we were staying, and it was perfect. But
that's amazing.
Yeah,
we have to plan your wedding cake then, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know who makes those frozen cheesecakes, and can they just make one giant one and a bit of four? Surely there's like, yeah, what's my budget? Here's a good question for you. Cakes are really expensive, you know, like getting a wedding cake. I can't even imagine, you know, you were lucky you had a family member make it, but like,
yes.
Is there a budget cake option for like a wedding? I don't know. I'm a budget type man. What cake could I have that is delicious that doesn't cost much?
I'm sure Costco has plenty of good options. But if we think, yeah, how do we think outside the box? I mean, okay, obviously there's a whole bunch of other options, like the cheese tower. I mean, that could end up not being being not that cheap. Or like the muffin tower, or toilet cakes, you know, a round of toilet cakes.
What's a toilet cake?
It's like the thing that's in the urinal that makes it not smelly.
But I'm not going to buy them. Like, I'm going to take them from.
And then everyone at the wedding has to wee on it. That's the cutting of the cake. Yep.
Okay, and this is why Beck won't marry me, because this is what she's worried about.
It's like a champagne tower. Anyway,
but I guess enough. Like in terms of cakes that are like, if you know it doesn't have to be a wedding cake, but like making a cake can be expensive. That's one thing I found. If I go like try and make a cake from fresh ingredients, like
sure,
it can be really expensive. So, and I guess that's kind of where the cake mix came into place. Like I was reading, actually talking about Wikipedia and interesting things, like we grew up with cake mix, so you don't really question where what it is or where it came from. But apparently during the Great Depression, there was like a surplus of molasses and a surplus of molasses and a lot of very hungry and economically deprived people, you know, people who were really struggling at that time. So this blew my mind, but there was a company in the US that patented a cake bread mix to deal with this economic situation. And this was the first example of like a cake in a box, which now you can go to your supermarket now and you can still buy a cake in a box for like a dollar, I think, you know, you get your home brand and that's going to make some sort of cake, which is a pretty amazing thing. So, and I guess, yeah, that's kind of triggered what, you know, cake started to become this mass produced thing rather than a at home, you know, baking thing, which I think we've gone back to a little bit. I think people, there's been a big reemergence of people wanting to make things fresh. But yeah, definitely when I was a kid, the cake mix was God, you know, it was like, you buy that cake mix, you chuck your, maybe an egg or two in, you make, you know, your brownie mix. So yeah, I found that really interesting as well. So I guess, you know, maybe that's my budget option, is just going to Aldi, buying 50 cake mixes, you know, and then we're good to go.
Well, I made my wife like a cake mix for a microwave mug cake that she could, you know, use throughout the year. Like I gave her like a little voucher and she could like tick off when she used it. So maybe, you know, we're going to be in lockdown for the next, you know, 50 years. So you're inevitably going to have a lockdown wedding. So you could just make up some of this microwave mug cake mix and send it out to people, and then that'll be the wedding cake.
Nice.
In the microwave.
Done. You know, we Eat endorses the microwave. It's the greatest tool you can have in your kitchen. So.
Yeah, and makes a delicious kind of oozy lava cake. Yeah, it's guaranteed happiness in 2 minutes. The recipe says it's the most dangerous recipe in the world.
But I must say, you know how you were saying before how your parents didn't make you, you know, you didn't really have cake because you didn't have an oven. Yeah, there are different ways to make cake. Yeah, like I said the other day, I used my Instant Pot, which is I've been a little bit obsessed with recently. Yeah, I made a cheesecake out of that. So it was like a steamed cheesecake. It was bloody good. It kind of came out a bit like one of those, like a Japanese cheesecake. That was really impressive. And I did have an ex-partner of mine years ago made me a, also, you know, of Asian heritage. So the oven was not a huge, hugely used accessory in their kitchen, but she made a Sydney Swans cake in the microwave, which
that's amazing.
I must say, well, it was very, very impressive. So
what makes it a Sydney Swan cake?
Yeah, I think the sponge was made in the microwave and then it was decorated in the shape of a Sydney Swan.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't just like put in like cake mix and it came out like a football, like or a swan. Yeah. All right. Well, here's a question for you. You know, while we're thinking of recipes, innovative ways to make cake, if we had the 888 cake, you know, if we had to make, you know, we often do this. We often challenge ourselves to think on the spot. What are our favorite things? Like, I don't know, kimchi. That's my favorite. Does that go on? Could we have a kimchi cake? That's maybe not going to work.
I mean, you could have like a savory. You could have like a savory kimchi cake, I think.
Yeah,
almost like a weird frittata. But like the challenge would be to make a sweet kimchi cake.
Okay, sweet kimchi cake. All right, I'm into that. What any other ingredients that would help out there?
Cabbage, chili, chocolate. I mean, the there is precedent for a vegetably chocolate cake. Like you can have like a beetroot cake. Or a zucchini cake, obviously carrot cake. So I reckon it's possible. I reckon it could be okay. Picking up on like the chili chocolate thing. I mean, I was thinking, you know, we've got to try to make it like a banh mi carrot cake.
Oh,
so like because you got like the pickled carrot component, and then I don't know some type of like, kind of pate. Mayonnaise cream cheese frosting. I'm trying to think whether it could actually
like,
work.
Could it be like a bit like a bread and butter pudding, you know, like you've got you know, you got like the nice Vietnamese crusty bread, like, I don't know, something like that, but just yeah, the pate would be the difficult ingredient to embrace in a cake.
But again, pate picks up quite well on like pairs quite well with fruity flavors, so I reckon yeah, there's legs for it. I don't know if I'm game to attempt it, but I'll put the call out there for people that have more time than me.
I'm just trying to see. I'm searching kimchi dessert, and it's not looking too good. Kimchi seaweed popcorn.
I would try kimchi on ice cream. I mean the laoganma or like the crispy chili oil. Having crispy chili oil on ice cream was a big thing in China.
Really?
And it was a big hit. I can imagine it being delicious. I haven't done it yet, but maybe I'll try it tonight. But I reckon it could work. Maybe like some type of like caramelized kimchi that's been crisped up. It's got some kind of bit of texture to it. Deep fried kimchi ice cream.
All right,
it's happening.
Cake. That's our new cake shop coming to a suburb near you. We've already gone under before we opened.
Well, you know, it's the time for outlandish side projects.
Exactly. Well, look, we did it, Brian.
We did it.
And look, we're not going to make any promises about when we record again. It, we'll be, we're alive and well, and we will be back with more episodes of 888. I must say, Brian, this is just because I know you don't get to, you know, I get to see the stats and stuff of if anyone's listening to the podcast, and we presume no. But then every week I log on and there are still people listening to episodes we recorded a year ago.
Wow.
This is a podcast we've never advertised to anyone. I don't, we got in that one Guardian article. So whoever you are, like, I only have like three friends, so it can't be you. But whoever you are, thank you for listening to 888. It means the world.
Yeah, it really does.
And we'll be back. Don't you worry. And I hope you, after you listen to this, you're inspired. Maybe go eat a slice of cake or just get Black Star delivered, because I'm about to delve into the second half of this dragon fruit cake that I've got here. And Brian, you got any more beer left, or you've run out?
I've got a little bit left. It's beautiful. Nice kind of cherry and stouty notes. So yeah, it's a beautiful afternoon in Sydney.
All right. Well, cheers, Brian. I'm going to chuck this cake in my mouth. This is great. Love you guys. All right.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening. All right. Bye.
Bye.